Come down to the little garden with me. Come go with me. Come go and see.
I'm Chris Greenspan. You're listening to SGV Weekly, the podcast that claims to be your fix of the 626, but is really just a vinyl blog in disguise. This week, we're joined by Brian Amalfitano, one of the three brothers running the Midnight Hour record stores. His twin brother Sergio started up the first shop in San Fernando with his wife a few years ago. Then, during the chaos of the early pandemic, Brian and his younger brother Adrian took the leap too and opened another store at Shoppers Lane in Covina, just blocks from where classic SGV stores Feedback, Hot Rocks, and California Records used to be. But the Midnight Hour isn't a rehash of those shops. They're focused on serving this generation of vinyl fans, because Brian understands what it's like to be just starting out as a music collector.
I started sort of really young, like when I was like 8 years old, I got really into Nirvana, and then that just exploded.
Stick around later for the extremely expensive Nirvana record that got away.
I remember coming here and like going to Circuit City, which is, you know, obviously that dates me. yeah. And then there was like also an FYE, and there was like a Tower by the mall.
I used to go to Circuit City for their great listening stations. Gone now, sadly. FYE, I've never been there, but it looks like it's basically a toy store at this point. And Tower's just a website now, but there are things you can't learn shopping online. Like how to get away with stealing.
I mean, I remember I was under the felony count, so that's what counted. You know, it was one of those things where I was like, dude, I loved all music, and I would just, you know, go with a magnet and fucking swipe the thing, and you know, and then eventually I got caught one time, and you know, paid a fee and did community service or whatever.
Just so we're clear, I was kidding. Don't try that at the Midnight Hour. New LPs in your pants. Don't mix. Plus, Brian's like a really nice store owner. You don't want to steal from him.
If some kid wants to come in and be like, hey, do you have this? And I'm like, no, that sucks. Like, that's a shitty feeling to give to a kid. You know what I mean? Like, they're just trying to get into something. You know, I remember being young and liking, you know, Vanilla Ice or whatever. Yeah, Ninja Rap, you know, Ninja Turtles too. It's a great movie. And then, you know, and then getting fucking made fun of, you know, and I was like, oh, that's a shitty feeling, you know.
At the Midnight Hour, you'll find new metal right next to whatever the hell real metal is. So nothing is crapped on, though the focus of the shop is all the hip stuff that we're used to going to LA for. But the SGV's oldies tradition is all over the store too. We'll get into why it's called the Midnight Hour right after this break. I'm gonna wait till the
midnight hour. Support for SGV Weekly comes from Dr. Rubin's Pomade.
Made in Alhambra with a secret recipe since World War II that nourishes your hair with natural ingredients. It comes in flavors like melon, chocolate, and cherry, but please don't eat it. Try their lip balm instead. It lasts for hours. Get yours at drrubenspomade.com and use promo code SGVWeekly at checkout for 15% off. That's drrubenspomade.com.
Here are a couple things you can do to help us out. Share the show with someone who cares about the San Gabriel Valley. Rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Follow us at SGVWeekly on Instagram. And consider giving some bucks to our Patreon. You can find it on sgvweekly.com. Now back to the show.
So yeah, it's called the Midnight Hour because the Midnight Hour. The Amalfitanos were raised in La Puente, Baldwin Park, and El Monte, where punk and soul music were the soundtrack to the everyday.
Here in SGV, you know, you had Lowrider Soul and Chicano Soul, and you know, have the history of also in Whittier, the Midnighters and all these Chicano Latino soul bands and stuff like that. I think even for Record Store Day, they were releasing one of the Hop recordings. There used to be a restaurant called The Hop also here in City of Industry. I mean, we used to go there and play shows every once in a while, but way back and then when we were super young, we were like, it's The Hop, it's a legend, you know, and we had nothing to do with soul, obviously, but I think we realized that we grew up going to quinceañeras. We grew up, you know, going to La Puente and listening to norteños and corridos and listening to oldies and listening, you know, all these cholos and old school tweakers that don't exist anymore, you know, in La Puente and everything. But, you know, you used to listen to those songs and you used to listen to, like, all these shout outs and, you know, all this sort of doyers fucking culture, you know, and it's like, oh, yeah, we're all Latinos and we grew up listening to this stuff.
But there's multiple meanings to the midnight hour, because their store, in essence, is neo-soul. It takes influences across genres and languages to make a new version of the subculture.
And I think, you know, it might be generational that, like, when you talk to older Latino people, like all my friends' grandparents, you know, they didn't teach their children Spanish because they were like, no, you have to assimilate. You have to, you know, fit in to American culture. And so they lost a little bit of that culture, where kids nowadays are like, no, I can claim my culture. I can be proud to be Chicano. I can be proud to, you know, represent these things. And I think that's also part of why that music is alive and thriving. You know, people are no longer ashamed.
And Chicanos are the ones they cater to. Not only with the Sacred Souls and Los Yesterdays, but a bit of everything we might be into. The Misfits, MF Doom, Linda Ronstadt, Caifanes, Selena, Brenton Wood.
It's interesting looking around because it's clear that it is, like you said, hand curated. But at the same time, we've got the stuff here that is sort of like universally recognized as cool. You know, like somebody else could feasibly have the exact same record store selection, obviously with distributors.
Yeah.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. But something about it doesn't feel paint by numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a little bit of each person's personalities. For example, my brother, Sergio, he, you know, obviously being in power violence for so long and hardcore music for so long, his knowledge of like punk stuff and my knowledge by default by being around it for so long and, you know, and playing in bands like that, we kind of are comfortable adding that stuff. Adrian, he has a lot of good suggestions because there are things that I don't listen to. He's 10 years younger than us. But, you know, he knows a lot about soundtracks and composers and things like that. So he'll, you know, all these movies that we grew up watching, he'll remember like, oh, this movie has a really good soundtrack. This has this. Or he'll suggest things sort of that, you know, are newer to us because maybe I'm not listening to it. Also, I do have, you know, the Vinyl Villains blog and everything, which was my thing usually before the pandemic, was I would just go to 4 or 5 concerts a week. I think I'm invested in this. You know, sometimes you're a lifer because anyone could open a store. Anyone could open a record store. You're right. You know, you have a distributor. Anyone could buy anything. You could look at your top 100 and be like, I want to just buy this and sell this. But being in a band, being, you know, constantly going to things, like, you know, you become a critic, you become, you know, a little bit more open subjectively towards these things, and it's just part of it now.
It's a good thing Midnight is as curated as it is, because I'm that guy who's going to go through every record in your store looking for just one good deal that I want to walk away with, and then put everything else back in new arrivals. But at Midnight, I can just get a reissued classic of something I never made the time to listen to, like Stranded. Or I can check out something from a current band that's really good, like Fontaine's DC. That's a side of collecting I never thought I'd see myself on. Because back like 12 years ago when vinyl prices first jumped up over $20, I was so freaking pissed. But now I guess if somebody wants to get their first record at Target at the Eastland Center, that's cool. But it'd be cooler if they went up the street to Shopper's Lane.
How do you feel about the vinyl boom?
I think it's great. I mean, I'm not going to knock CD. I'm not going to knock cassettes. I think all of it is part of a collector culture. You know, all of it is having something physical is important. Having something personal is important. I think vinyl it harkens back to a time. So when people come in here, you know, they see the little 45 adapter, or they see, you know, an 8-track, and it blows their mind. You know, they're like, oh my God, like, do you guys actually sell these? Do people buy these? So it's, you know, fun to see older people come back to it. And then it's fun to see, you know, younger people get into it, because they try to get, like, I need to get my 5 records or my 10 records that I really love. And then that's it. And you're like, okay, kid, you know, you're going to have 3,000 later. And you're like, I don't know what to do with this. So I think the vinyl boom is cool. Obviously companies are exploiting it for whatever it is, you know. You know, you see it kind of with Record Store Day when they press 5,000 copies of a record that's been out 50 times already. And you're like, okay, well, we don't need another one of those. But, you know, then again, I'm DIY, and I never got my record pressed by someone that makes 50,000 records anyways. You know, so I'm not competing against Adele or competing against whoever. You know, like, those pressing plans aren't meant for us. You know, we go the punk rock route and we press it local, or we press it through other means. So it's never really affected our supply chain. Punk rock has always pressed records, even when it was not cool to press records.
Is punk rock what kept record stores alive in the 90s?
I think so. I mean, obviously in the 90s, now you get all these collector records from like 90s hip hop and the golden era of hip hop and grunge and all these things, and alternative rock and all these things that people want to buy. And that's why they're so expensive and so rare, because they weren't pressing a lot of them. They were already like, we're going to CD. But punk rock was like, well, you know, we can't afford this new technology, or we can't do this, or we can't do that, or we just prefer having this physical thing. And now it's what makes those punk records more expensive, too, because they're like, well, you know, there's only 500 of this one because, you know, this band couldn't afford to do more or whatever. So I do remember used records for sure, used vinyl. You know, that's always something that people have always wanted to collect, you know, because it got really, really cheap. And so you could expand on your collection. And the people that were already collecting those, like DJs before, say, Serato or something, where, you know, you could just download a shit ton of songs and DJ that way. DJs were always collecting. And so I think hip hop and punk rock, which is also, to me, the two most valid forms of music that have happened in the last 40 years, since at least the 80s, you know, because they're underground. New music is always constantly coming up in those scenes. And it's just the most involved in community. You know, punk rock is communal. Hip hop is communal. I think it's always about fighting for your culture and fighting for your people, and making sure that, you know, you're not othered, or if you are othered, that you still have a collective family.
That's where the Midnight Hour comes from. Sergio is in ACX DC, and Brian is in Def Club with Justin Pearson. And both of them are trying to bring subculture to a generation now that experiences it in a totally different way than they did when they were growing up. So will it last?
I'm a firm believer in independent culture and DIY culture. I think that's never going to go away. Punk rock doesn't go away. Hip hop's not going to go away. Mixtapes and all these things aren't going to go away. You know, you're always going to have your oldies in your soul and people collecting those things and wanting it. But eventually, you know, maybe bullshit bands will stop pressing their records. But
follow up to that, do you think at that point vinyl will get cheaper?
I hope so. I do hope so. I mean, one thing I will say that is hard is that records are more expensive for sure. I mean, you know, you do have older people that come in and buy a record. They're like, oh, this record used to be $3 and now it's 10, you know, used or whatever. And you're like, yeah, well, you know, but you actually can see it. I mean, if you go to the middle of LA and you're going to buy a record, you're going to pay a lot more than you are if you go Arizona, Philadelphia, Chicago, some sort of not, you know, mega city that just wants to make money, you know. And the problem is that they have overhead costs. There's no way I could do this record store in LA. I don't think it'd be cost efficient. I think we'd have to pay a lot more. I think we'd have to sell a lot more. I think it would suck the life out of me. You know, I love being in San Gabriel Valley. I love being in my hometown, you know, being in this area, because it's not yet gentrified to the point where you're going to get pushed out and you can't afford it. But in LA, fuck no. They're going to push everyone out. Things are going to go up constantly. There's no way there's record stores are surviving. Look at Amoeba. Amoeba had to move. You know, it's much smaller.
And everything there costs 1.5 or twice as much what it did at the old location.
Oh, yeah. Because they need it to. And they need it to survive. And so when you buy a record. Now, also, I mean, I will say you could go on Amazon and buy every record. You could look at every record store ever and you could buy it cheaper on Amazon by a couple bucks. I mean, it's just part of it.
It's not fun, though.
It's not fun. That's the problem. When I go to a record store, if you come here and you could dig, okay, maybe you're going to pay a couple bucks more. That's just part of it, because Amazon, they freaking bought all those thousands and thousands of records. If you can't get it in stock here, you're going to go to Amazon. You're going to pay 19 bucks instead of 25 or something. But it all goes into Jeff Bezos' hands. Look, if you can't afford music to go to a physical store and support a mom and pop shop, I totally understand it. You know, no one has to shame you into doing it. You could buy it off Amazon. But at the end of the day, also, you have people that do have money, and you could be like, well, what's my moral code? Do I want to buy it on Amazon and pay cheaper? You know, because sometimes, you know, I would go to Amoeba and I'd look at records and I'd be like, I'd look at Amazon and be like, yeah, that's $3 cheaper. It's like, I don't need this record. But then I'd not buy it at either place. So you don't even have to buy a record. You can just fucking stream it if you want. But mom and pop shops, places that curate things, places that want to teach you things, you're never going to learn anything from Amazon. You know, like, you could buy all your basic records there, but there's no one there. Jeff Bezos isn't calling you up and saying, hey, you should check out this band. Hey, you should, you know, I really like this. Or like, hey, what do you like? Teach me about what you're listening to. You know, no one's going to interact with you. So, and customer service is trash.
As we wrapped our conversation up, I asked Brian why they don't have more used records, because I like them cheap and beat up. But what I didn't realize is that not only does Midnight have to compete with Amazon to sell new records, but they have to compete with other stores to go find the used ones too. Plus, there are other forces at work.
I've definitely gone to estate sales at, you know, 4 a.m. and going to buy records, and then they're all scratched up and warped and whatever. And, you know, they still want, you know, $5 for this $2 record, you know, or whatever. I've definitely gone places where you're like, yeah, this is not what someone would pay for this. You know, you could go buy, again, used stuff, and you'll find it places that are jacked up, like super jacked up. But I think because of Discogs, everyone thinks that they could sell their records at really expensive prices. So, like, if you go to a thrift store today, you could still find gems. If you go to an estate sale, you could still find these gems, but they're going to be few and far between as opposed to before. So, you know, you kind of have to weigh that between buying new stuff and selling new stuff, because also there's a new generation of record buyers and they want to buy newer stuff, you know, not necessarily, you know, use classic rock or something, you know. So there's benefits and there's drawbacks to Discogs, and you have to weigh that with your record store.
Brian Amalfitano is the co-owner of The Midnight Hour, where I've gotten records from Johnny Thunders, you can give me this, you can give me that, Husker Du, Whitney Houston, wait, let's see, what am I forgetting? Oh yeah, that extremely expensive Nirvana record that Brian wanted. What happened with that?
Jesus, there's so many records that I wish were bootleg just because I want to own them. You know, because it's like, oh, I can never own that.
You know? Yeah, even bootlegs that you wish you could just get a bootleg of a bootleg.
I do have a bootleg of a bootleg that I paid $150 for, even though it was a bootleg of a bootleg, which was the 7-inch of Nirvana's Love Buzz.
What made it worth $150 to you?
So it's the there's a whole website dedicated to this 7-inch of bootleg versions of it. Like, there's different versions that are released everywhere. And so I found it on eBay and I was like, okay, $150 is the cheapest I'll ever find it. An official Nirvana Love Buzz is somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000, something like that. And I physically saw one. I'm not going to name the record store, but I went to the record store. They had it for $5,000. Somebody gave it to them on consignment, and you know, it came up to like $5,750 or something with all the taxes and all the shit. And so I went. I needed to go see it. I needed to go see it physically. I needed to go be in the room with it, look at it. So I was like, okay, well, maybe if it costs $300, $400, $500 pushing it in my life, I would never. I was like, oh my God, I'm having these debates in my brain. Like, how much would you spend for it? Like, how much can you go broke right now? Like, and sure enough, I was like, hey, how much is that? It's like $5,000, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, holy fuck. My whole, just everything dropped outside of my body. I was like, oh no, I'm never going to own this. And this kid, like, I mean, I don't know how old he was, but he walked up and he's like, how much is it? And he said, all right, well, I have this credit card, but I think it only has a $5,000 limit. So let me call my dad and see if he'll push my limit. And then I got immediately bummed because I was like, this dude is going to buy this and probably flip it or something. And he's calling his dad to extend his credit card payment just to own, you know, this Nirvana thing. And I was like, I hate life. I hate being broke. I hate that I don't own this. I hate that this kid with his credit card and his dad bought it. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, fuck it. You know, I can't do anything about it, you know, but maybe one day if I won the lotto and I made millions, I'd still be like $5,000. Like, wow.
So is the pain of that moment what drove you to spend $150 on a bootleg of a bootleg?
I actually bought it before. Yeah, because I didn't.
Wait, you had the bootleg of a bootleg and you just wanted to go look at the real Mona Lisa.
I wanted to see the real Mona Lisa. You have to, you know, it's like looking at a Mona Lisa that's on a postcard, for, you know, but it's not, you know, it's just the sheer fact of like, I know this is fake. I return through so many
highways and so many tears. All right. This episode was specially mixed by Ryan, aka Jimmy Piranha, aka Huggy P. Pacheco. Our theme song is Carry Home by the Gun Club, courtesy of Manifesto Records. Ambient music by Kevin Greenspawn. Our logo was designed by Felipe Flores and Rita Greenspawn. I'm Chris Greenspawn. This is SGV Weekly.